Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Heritage Radio Network's We Dig Plants. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we are bringing the culture to horticulture. So it's the middle of February, and it's getting a little funky here in the Northeast.
Funky.
Yesterday was the coldest day on record so far. Snow is filthy with mounds of ice. There's absolutely no parking. The trees are blowing wildly.
The dogs are pooping wildly on the snow.
What is with the, it's snowing so I don't have to pick up my dog poop?
I think it's a New York thing.
Living in New York in the winter is probably one of the ugliest.
It's ugly.
Ugliest.
I like to describe
visions.
It like Sochi. It's like Sochi, Russia.
That's exactly it.
Gross.
And we're really wondering if this is ever going to end. There's very, very little gardening going on, except indoors. And of course, in our minds, we're always gardening. And we're dreaming of the warmer months. We're going to have some help today to get over this doldrum. A terrific guest will be joining us, Nicholas Staden from Monrovia Nurseries. He's the director of the New Plant Introductions. But before we get into what's hot and new for 2015, let's reveal our horticultural hero of the week. Carmen?
Can I speak like Don Pardo on this? That's on my mind because of Saturday Night Live's,
yes,
you know, 40th anniversary,
yeah,
last night, which was really funny, by the way. It was really, really great. Anyway, the horticultural hero is Harry Rosedale, who was the founder of Monrovia Nursery in 1926. About 90 years ago, Harry Rosedale pioneered the concept of growing plants in containers instead of in the ground and then uprooting them for sale and shipment, something that we kind of take for granted right now.
Yeah.
That was not the norm back then. He began his commercial enterprise on approximately 10 acres in Monrovia, California, right?
Yep.
And named his enterprise for the city in which it was located. His business thrived. By the 1950s, Monrovia Nursery had outgrown its space and relocated to Azusa, another community in the San Gabriel Valley. Since then, the company's become one of the top three wholesale horticultural growers in the United States. So we have Harry to thank for, you know, all those pots that we have that make it so much easier for us to be able to buy
and transport
plants. So thank you, Harry.
Rooftops.
Thank you, Harry.
So back to our present day, we have Nicholas Staden here. Welcome, Nicholas. How are you?
Oh, Alice and Carmen, I'm just going along like a piece of well-oiled machinery today. Thank you.
Excellent. So tell us how you got the most amazing job, Nicholas, at Monrovia. What's your background and how did you come to land at Monrovia?
Well, we probably need about a couple of hours to go through my background because this is like my fourth career. And my formal education, if I had one, was in farming. And I went through agricultural college and served an apprenticeship on farms in England. And then I went to work for the American Air Force in England, and I ran a safety program for them where we actually flew falcons, the birds on the bases, to keep birds off because they were having a horrendous problem with bird strikes.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to... Then I went to sea for a number of years, and long story short, the gentleman whose boat I was running, he actually owned a nursery in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
So we were doing a refit on this boat in Fort Lauderdale where I met my bride, which was a long while ago, and one thing led to the other, and we decided to get married. And this guy, this gentleman who owned the boat, said, well, I have a nursery in Albuquerque, so you have to go and work for me there, which is what I did. So that's how I got into the nursery business, and it was really by luck.
Okay.
And I think, you know, agriculture and horticulture were kind of joined at the hip. So it's just been a great adventure. And some years on, Monrovia approached me to come join them. It was actually like 25 years ago. And so I've done various things here at Monrovia. I've worked in sales and run the sales department. And about 15 years ago, they said, well, we need to move you into new plants. So it's kind of like this is your next assignment, you know?
Right. Great. So tell us a little bit about what a day is like for you in the new plant department.
Well, I normally get up around 10:30 and you know, just kind of wander around the house in my dressing gown. You know, maybe have a large cigar about 11, and maybe a spot of lunch. You know,
yeah, excellent.
So here to give you an idea. Right, just recently, I was up at the Seattle Flower and Garden Show, and I know we're going to talk about that.
Yeah,
my day would start at about 4 o'clock in the morning, so I'd get up, grab a cup of tea from somewhere in the hotel, and then work through emails, because we're contacting and we're working with people all over the world in plants, so you're trying to cross all these time differences.
Right.
So I would work from like 4 till 8 on emails and other projects, because I do a lot of presenting for the company as well.
Uh-huh.
And I like to have the opportunity to chat with you about plants. And then from like 8 right the way through the day till maybe 7 or 8 that night, we'd be working the show with consumers, we'd be talking about plants, we'd be talking about what we do, we'd be talking to them about what's going on in their garden, what colors they like, what's working, what's not working.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of when you're on the road. But when you're in the office, you're always, you're mining for new plants, you're evaluating the plants you have on hand, you're working with the production team on production scheduling, you're working with the marketing department and the customers on how the plants are being brought to market, you're working with garden magazines on information, pictures, you're working with consumers on information, pictures, garden clubs, master gardeners, and then, you know, obviously you're traveling as well, where you're working with breeders and hybridizers, where you're actually in their gardens or in their facilities looking at plants. So it keeps me busy, you know.
I know. When we met you in Pittsburgh, you're a very fit individual. You have no time to sit, you know.
Right.
You're running here and there. And I'm curious, Nicholas, so is it a collective kind of decision? What is going to be introduced from year to year? Do you have a lot of input into that? Or is it something that, you know, is done more collectively?
Yeah, it's very... Yeah, so I guess I'm the figurehead, for want of a better word.
Right.
So we work, there's a pretty large group of us in the nursery, you know, and bearing in mind, you know, I work out of the main office in Azusa here in California. So I'm here, but then we have the growing locations. We have 4 growing locations. We've got one in the Central Valley in a place called Visalia in California, one up in Dayton, Oregon, one in Cairo, Georgia, and one in Connecticut, I think in Gandy. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Uh-huh.
So we work very closely with the locations as to how the plants are doing. Because, you know, sometimes, let's say in California, if you're trialing tropical hibiscus or bougainvilleas, they would just be in Visalia and Cairo, where if you're working on hardier plants, whether it's like picea's or maples or whatever it might be, they might be in the colder locations. So
right.
There's a lot of trialing and evaluation that goes on. You're also working very closely with the people you've got the plants from. And, you know, these can be individuals, these can be families, these can be companies where they have breeding programs. But the whole goal is to stay very closely connected with everyone. Like a lot of businesses, I call it belly to belly, where when you're with people, yes, you have all the technology of emails and telephones and everything, but when you're with these people, when you're looking at the plants and evaluating them and reporting back to how they're doing, that's when everyone is doing their best business, because they want to hear back from you what's working, And then they can maybe massage their program. You know, let's say, for instance, they have a plant that's 5 feet high with red flowers, whatever it might be, and consumers are looking for something that's a little smaller, or they're looking for something that's maybe a zone hardier. That's when you're giving all the feedback to the breeders and the owners of the plant material.
Do you have a massive database of all this information, Nicholas? Big spreadsheet?
We have a satellite that's orbiting the Earth, housing all the Monrovia information.
That's what I figured.
That's a joke, okay?
Yeah, exactly, nope. Right.
I don't think that's away in the future, though.
we have a massive database, mm-hmm. and like, you know, the history. So you've got all this stuff on spreadsheets, and it's being backed up on computers. But you know, the real relationships, they're with you on a personal basis, and
right.
So you can have all the stuff in a computer. That's great, because you know there'll be a day when myself, and I work with a very gifted young man called Jonathan Peterson, when Jonathan and I will move on, we'll retire or do other things. So we have these relationships and trust until such time as we move on,
right?
You know,
yeah.
When we retire. And then these younger people that are coming along, they'll take them on. So some of the families and the businesses we've done business with for years and years and years. It's really a long-term deal.
Right.
And I love the description that you said, belly to belly. And that's one of the things that I love about our business, is that it is still very much family-owned.
Right.
At many levels in the supply chain, so to speak, you know, from the breeding to the retail end. So you can still have those kinds of relationships. And Alice and I experience it on a smaller scale ourselves as designers and plant purchasers.
Uh-huh.
You know, we can go to our nurserymen and say, we have this project. We need an alternative for this evergreen. What can you suggest? And, you know, this is over decades of working with people that, you know, you just don't email them. You don't get the response by email. You get the response by calling them on the phone or going down to the nursery.
Yep.
And in that moment walking the fields with them, they'll say, you know, I have something for you. I can find this for you. But if it was just an email, it's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, it's not the same kind of relationship and connection and trust, you know?
Yeah.
So you just,
and you know what? I bear with me, Alison, Carmen, this goes right back to you, because the time that we spent chatting with each other at the Garden Writers event in Pittsburgh, you know, I'm not blowing smoke at you. You guys are really cool because you're tied into all sorts of fun things, whether it's plants or food or whatever it might be, what's going on. But you want to meet the people who are behind the story, and that's great.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Well, I think that's also what makes our job so fun, is that the deeper you delve, the more knowledge you have to share then with your clients, you know? And I think we all love plants, right? But there's people that love plants, and then there's people that love plants.
We can't forget the hands-on aspect of it,
right?
You know,
the trial period of what works and what doesn't. You know,
yeah. I'm curious, Nicholas. So I might put you on the spot here for a moment. So bear with me. Was there a plant?
Oh, lovely. Thank you.
I know that you're a seasoned professional, so you can handle this, okay? Was there a plant that you were so excited about and were certain that was going to be great and a hit, and it just surprised you that it didn't?
Well, there is one plant that springs right to mind, and it was a plumbago.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the plant, the trade name was Royal Cape. And she actually originated from South Africa. Now, plumbago, there's a variety over here that's grown on the West Coast and then all the way down through the southern part of America, and probably goes up to about North Carolina. That's where it's probably like a Zone 7, Zone 8. But this plant had the most drop-dead gorgeous flower. Most plumbagos, they're kind of a soft, pale, kind of bluish flower.
Right.
This flower was, you know, brighter blue. It was almost like a turquoise, teal blue. It was a cool as all get out. And we got behind this plant and we ramped up production and we had a lot of plants on the ground and no one was interested in it. I mean, literally, our customers turned their noses up at us.
That's weird.
Do you think it was the color?
We're thinking, what the hell is going on here? What are you people thinking about? This is a real smoker. So anyway, at that time, there was a very, very gifted gentleman working who ran the sales department, really super chap called Mr. Cliff Comstock. And Cliff was very, very much a mentor of mine and has been very instigational in kind of a lot of things I've done at Monrovia. So Cliff said to me, Nicholas, what we need to do for all the customers that are buying plants, he said, we need to give them 10 1-gallons and 5 5-gallons free of charge for the next 30 days when they order from us. And that's what we did. And anyway, so by showing the customers the plant and the consumers buying the plant, then that plant really took off. But had we not did that or done that, it would have been a disaster. And then the plant got going. So, you know, probably we did not do a great job of marketing the plant as we should have done. So, you know, yours learn by your mistakes. And that was a good one to learn from.
Okay, here's kind of a chicken and an egg question. What comes first? Like the colors for the year? Or, you know, like every season or every year kind of has like a color palette, right? It's a hot year or it's a cool year, it's a pastel year or it's, you know, so where does that originate? Or does it come from you all?
No. You know what? That's a great question. So you've got the various color groups. The one that I tend to follow is a color group called Pantone,
right?
P-A-N-T-O-N-E.
Right.
So the Pantone color of the year this year is Marcella. So Marcella is kind of a color of wine,
right?
Or a red wine, but there are several plays on that. You know, there are several different variations. You can lean into dark pinks. You can lean into purples, and then you've got Marcella. Maybe you can lean a little bit into some of the softer reds or the burgundy reds. So you can move that color around. But you know what? The Pantone people, the color people, they hold the color of the year very, very close to their chest.
Right.
For a number of years, we had tried to kind of be a part of that group, and I guess we just weren't important enough. So they said, no, Monrovia, absolutely not. Don't call us, we'll call you.
So when is that color announced?
I beg your pardon?
When is that color of the year announced?
Oh, I think it's announced very late the preceding year.
Okay.
So like in December, something like that. So what we have to do, so as soon as the color is announced, then we scurry round and we will find plants, whether it's perennials or peonies or roses or woody ornamentals, whatever it might be, that have flowers or leaves or stems that match that color of Marcella.
That's a PR nightmare. That is a PR nightmare for you all, right?
You know what? It's difficult, but we do, as an industry, we tend to spend a lot of our time reacting. So we've got good at this, and we're very, very gifted with people that we have a lot of ladies who work in the marketing department, and they're very quick. So I'd say, you know, ladies, Marcella's the new color. And honestly, by the end of the day, we'll have a whole list of plants that would tie into the Pantone color of the year.
That's a lot of power.
Yeah.
Pantone has a lot of power. I mean, that's going to affect
makeup,
clothing, fashion, you know, flowers, everything.
Right.
I noticed that Marsala, and I was like, Marsala, that's interesting. I thought it was really an interesting choice.
Chartreuse, orange.
Right.
Like, I mean, we all can date, you know, you can date things by the color, you know, the last like 5 or 6 years.
Well, I found it interesting that it was a food. It's a wine. It's a Sicilian wine.
So they're using
wine.
Food
so I'm like, I thought it was really interesting, Nicholas, that they chose a beverage, you know, something named after a beverage, Marsala, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't think that was hardly an accident that was happening.
Well, here's the other thing. If you jump on the internet and you type in colorstrology, there's a lady, I believe her first name is Michelle. So this lady has a website where you can tie your birth date into a color that supposedly is linked to your birthday. You know, like you have a gemstone color.
Right.
I think my gemstone is an opal, something like that. And I do. I love opals. So if you've got a color that's your favorite color for people who do business with you or people who love you and they buy you a plant or a bunch of flowers, it sure makes life a whole lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. You just came back from the Northwest Flower Show talking about, you know, themes and colors. And tell us first, if you could put that show kind of into perspective and history, tell us a little bit about that show and then why was it interesting to you and what fun things you saw?
Great, you know, great question. Thank you for that. So I've been going up to the Seattle Flower and Garden Show or Northwest Flower and Garden Show for years and years. And they have been going for a lot of years. I don't know the exact amount. They were run for years by an extraordinarily gifted man called Duane Kelly. Duane ran the flower show in Seattle, and he also ran the San Francisco Flower and Garden Show. And he basically built these up from scratch to have an enormous following. So Duane retired a number of years ago, and these were bought by more commercial companies because he'd done a great job of setting everything up. But this is where gardeners, regardless of age, once a year come together and they look at the new trends, they look at gardens, they look at all the accessories that go with gardens, whether it's rakes or shovels or hose and greenhouses, like greenhouses and cold frames.
Right.
Those are absolutely on the edge of the precipice of opportunity.
Uh-huh.
And so, more and more people want to kind of grow a few things themselves, vegetables, and we can talk about that in a moment. So they go there to look at all the new ideas. You know, the other thing is, Alice and Carmen, it's like garden writers. It's a big social event.
Right,
yes.
So that's a place where people can come together and they, not only do they catch up with themselves, but there's a lot of presenting that goes on. The lady that runs the speakers up there, her name is Janet Ensley. She has 90 presenters who present over a period of like 4 or 5 days. And I'm lucky enough to be one of those presenters. And you'll present in front of groups anywhere from like 300-400 up to 800 or 900.
Wow.
So the presentations are a real big part of what goes on.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just going to say some of our followers were also there, and we saw lots of pictures of some of the other attendees, and some of the display gardens were quite beautiful.
Oh, the whole it's like a Disneyland of a garden.
Yeah.
Garden shows have really got to get the emotion. They've got to get the heart going, pitter-patter. So they have a big area garden. You know what was absolutely fascinating, Alison Carmen, was one of the very popular colors up there this year was orange. And orange, or tangerine, mm-hmm. that was the Pantone color of the year, I think, like 2 years ago.
Right.
So on these kind of colors, there's great residual value. So there were, like masses of tulips that were orange, there were chairs that were orange, there were sunshades that were orange. Orange is a very, very striking color.
Yeah.
And because the show is like up in the Pacific Northwest, there are lots of conifers.
Yeah.
So you've got kind of the dark greens or the blues, and you put them beside orange. Both these colors kind of jump out at you. It's fantastic.
So tell us about some really cool plants that you saw there, and what's Monrovia unleashing?
Well, I tell you, if I can maybe just quickly, so like on the trends.
Oh, yeah.
You said
yes.
To me, Nicholas, if you say, Nicholas, what's the big trend? So glass, and more glass. And, I saw this a year ago in a couple of garden shows, Seattle being one of them. Glass in our gardens is rapidly becoming fantastically popular. A lot of the glass, it's all hand-blown. It's blown by artisans. Mm-hmm. Whether it's green or blue or white, one of the things I saw last year and this year were these fabulous bamboo culms or bamboo stems that were about 7 or 8 feet high, and they're probably about anywhere from 2 inches in diameter, and they're made out of glass, and they look exactly like bamboo. I mean, they're just delightful.
That's reminding me. That's reminding me of the Dale Chihuly exhibit.
I was going to say that. This might be some of the residual effect because
right,
once he...
that was like 4, 5, 6 years ago that he really came out.
And was
that.
In public gardens.
Right.
You know, and it kind of... I think some of that might have trickled down. I'm really glad to...
Into the residential market.
Yeah,
right?
I'm really glad to hear that because I don't think people use, especially in the Northeast, we found, Nicholas, I don't think people use garden ornament enough or art in the garden enough. I think it happens more on the West Coast, and I'm glad to see that it's continuing because maybe some of it will wash over onto the East Side. People are afraid or something here to bring.
There's also some temperature issues.
Yeah, that's definitely in you know, having the winter and having to deal with packing it away. But right. I think it's an important part of the garden making process. So it's really gratifying to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun. So you had all the glass that was going on there. You had these fantastic gardens. I started to see, and I noticed this a couple of years ago, there's a couple of companies that make metal crows or ravens.
Oh, really?
They make them out of metal, and then they'll put them into the branches of plants, or they put them on the buildings, and they look... They look absolutely fantastic, very beautiful. On the plants themselves, there was a lot of plants with structure. So yes, you've got your rhododendrons and forsythias and lilacs and all these plants which have been forced, but clearly there was a big interest in plants of structure. So whether it was thuyas or conifers or hemlocks, whatever it might be, plants that were kind of upright and pointed. These were planted in groups of one or two. They were used in containers. There's also a coming trend on the market called a cathedral of plants.
Yeah.
And this cathedral, it's an old European thing where they'll plant very, very upright plants in a triangle of three. And in the middle of this, you put a seat. And as these plants grow up, you go and sit on your seat, and you're completely surrounded by these three or four plants. And you look up to the sky like you're looking up at a spire in a cathedral. And eventually, all you see is a pinpoint of light, and it's called a cathedral. So you're very private. You're very quiet. You shoo the rest of the family away. Yeah, this is where you get your quiet time, male or female. Uh-huh. It goes for both.
What a beautiful idea, and you know, it's that's exactly what the flower show should be about, is those big ideas. And we have to take a break. Stay on the line. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
And today's break song is called Spreadin' Honey by the California Honey Drops. This is We Dig Plants on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You better do what you want when you get up in the morning, 'cause it won't be long before you're dead and gone. Yeah, no, there ain't no telling.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus, Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network, and we're talking about trends and Monrovia nursery today with Nicholas Stadden, the director of New Plant Introductions. Now, Nicholas, you have to tell us about Dan Hinckley and his collection. Everybody who knows knows how obsessed Alice and I are with historical aspects of gardening, and especially plant hunters. And we have in our midst a modern-day plant hunter in Dan Hinckley. So tell us about how Monrovia works with him and what you all are working on now.
Yeah, you know what? Thanks for the question. We as a company, but also as a group of plant people, you know, both you ladies and all of us, we're so lucky to have someone like Dan Hinckley amongst us. And Dan is probably the leading plant explorer in the world today. And he is he's a very humble man. You know, if you met him in the airport, let's say you're traveling somewhere and you met him and he was sitting having a cup of coffee in Starbucks, you could drop into the chair beside him and he would engage you in conversation and you could ask him whatever question you like, and Dan would be like this long-lost friend. He's just a superman.
Yeah.
He really is. So he travels all over the world for us looking for plants. And the area of great expertise, he spends a lot of time in Taiwan, Japan, China, and he's got some very, very close contacts in China, also Vietnam, and a year or so ago was back in northern Myanmar, or Burma, as many people know it.
Yeah.
He was actually the first plant explorer to go legally back into northern Myanmar in about 40 years because of the issues they've had.
Sure.
The military and everything else that goes on there. But that aside, so Dan looks, we collaborate very closely with him on plants that we're looking for, you know, whether it's hardy plants or more temperate plants, foliage, which is really of great importance. Just to give you an example, I'm a real fan of, you know, variegated plants. And so recently he brought back a Fatsia, which is probably the most striking variegated plant. You might remember seeing it when we were in Pittsburgh.
I actually saw it just a month ago at the Plantarama plant fair that was here in Brooklyn in New York, and the Monrovia rep brought it, and I was drooling over it. It's gorgeous.
Oh, she's lovely.
Yeah.
So we've been looking for hardier Schaeffleras. Mm-hmm. For years and years. Most Schaeffleras don't, they go about a zone 8. So Dan has been collecting Schaeffleras at very high altitude, so they're hardier. And we know we've got Schaeffleras which are hardy down to zone 7, and the goal now is to take them down to a zone 6.
That would be amazing. That's New York.
That would be great.
That would be fabulous, wouldn't it? We're also working with him on climbing hydrangeas. We're doing some work with conifers. We're doing some work with perennials. So it's really a collage of plants that are regionally significant. The other thing is that Dan's got quite a following, so he also helps us with presenting. He helps us with photography. He helps us with narrative. Mm-hmm. He's written a couple of super books. So I actually was with him on Saturday night. We vacated the building at the show for about 4 or 5 hours because he had a Mahonia conference where it took about 2 years to put this together at his home over on Bainbridge Island or Kensat Peninsula on the west of Seattle, where people from Europe and from all over America, there was about 50 plants people, had flown in for this Mahonia conference, which took place for about 3 days. And there were all sorts of Mahonias that were being shown, seedling varieties, different flowered varieties, different leaf varieties that had been found in Mexico,
right,
South America, Vietnam, China. And
wow.
So from there, there'll be a whole host of new Mahonias that will be brought to market.
You're making the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I can't wait to see those Mahonias.
You know, my hair, the hair on the back of my neck has all fallen out because it used to stand up so much. It's not there anymore.
Hanging around with Dan Hinckley will do that.
Dan, yeah. We've heard Dan speak a number of times, and he is an incredible he's an incredible speaker. You
right.
know, he
gets you so excited.
He gets you excited
about plants.
He can, you know, if he was in charge of the Catholic Church, you know, things would be different.
Yeah.
Hey, now let's not get political. So tell us a little bit more about what you all, as a company, are really super excited about for 2015 and for down the pike.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that, so, and this is from the heart, Alice and Carmen. Personally, and I really believe this, that gardening and gardeners and wannabe gardeners, you know, young men and women, children who have not been involved in gardening before, we're all on the precipice of opportunity. So I think that we're going to see gardening and plants, young and old, plants that have been around for a long time, and the new plants, I think we're going to see this absolutely take off into the stratosphere. There's going to be more and more people gardening. If they don't have a garden themselves and they just have a patio, they're going to be gardening in a couple of containers.
Right.
Or they're going to get on the list of the local community garden.
Right.
Because the community gardens, they're going through the roof. They have a list of people wanting to be part of it round the block.
Yeah.
So some of the things that I'm really, really excited about, and I'm going to run through a couple of new plants and some old plants. One of them, I think we chatted about this when we were together. There's this big, big trend in Europe about using clematis or clematis as ground covers.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a great idea. So one of my favorite varieties right now is called a clematis called Sapphire Indigo. And for listeners, get your pens and papers out. That's Sapphire Indigo, Indigo. The plant's been out there for a couple of years, but she's part of her heritage is actually an American native clematis, one on the prairies. So she only gets about maybe 18, 20 inches high, and then she'll get maybe, a couple of feet wide, maybe 3 feet wide, but she spreads beautifully.
Sapphire Indigo.
Another group of... Yeah, she's like... And you can go on the Monrovia website, and you can see the plant. So just type in Clematis Sapphire Indigo. And there's another group of clematis, which are called... they're scented varieties. One is called Sweet Summer Love.
Mm.
And Sweet Summer Love has a real nice kind of like purple reddish flower. It's your smaller variety of clematis flowers, so they do very well in the hot areas. They don't necessarily need their roots to be shaded, and they're really, really fragrant. We spoke about the Fatsia, which I was so excited about. For those of you in who love the hydrangeas, we've got a hydrangea that we've looked for years and years, which is a repeat blooming hydrangea, and her name is Enchantress. And she's just going to enchant you to death, you know.
Great.
And she's a mophead variety.
Uh-huh.
Her flowers will be pink in alkaline soil and blue in acidic soil. But what's so unusual about her, one, she's a repeat bloomer, but she has these fabulous ruby red stems. So for those of you that are into flower arranging, what you basically do is you strip the leaves off and put these in a tall vase, and the plants are absolutely fantastic. You'll see the ruby red stem.
Is that a Dan Hinckley find?
No, this was actually a plant discovery that was found by a gardener in Pasadena, of all places.
Oh, wow.
And so it was just a selection. So here's an example of gardeners that find an unusual plant that called us, and then probably 5 or 6 years later, after we trialed and evaluated the plant, we brought her to market.
What's your best-selling plant at Monrovia?
In terms of quantity, quantities or dollars?
Both. If you, I know you. I know, well, I'm putting you on the spot, but
no, the best selling. Wow, do you know what? There are so many. Probably as a group of, I think as a group of plants together, I would say there are hydrangeas because you've got the quercifolias, you know, the oak leaves, and the paniculatas and the serratas and the mopeds. There's so many of them which are lumped together.
Right.
And interestingly enough, Alice and Carmen, that if you look on search engines for plants, hydrangeas are the most popular group of plants that gardeners
search
put
for.
Into a search engine looking for information.
Right.
Because they don't know how to prune them.
I was just going to say that.
Well, yeah.
How and when.
And so that's why it's really fun, because these repeat bloomers, you know, you really don't have to be too particular how you prune them, because the flower, they bloom on new wood, so they're going to come back.
Right.
That's the biggest, that's one of the biggest mistakes that people make, you know, and that's good. If you can simplify things, Nicholas, and people aren't intimidated, they're going to come back for more. It's really quite as simple as that, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited about the clematis because I remember seeing, I mean, clematis' ground cover is not a new thing, but it's a new thing in a broad sense. I remember seeing it in old gardening books, and, you know, of 20, 30, 40 years ago. And it's really exciting to see something that had been used being brought back, you know, because a lot of people are also intimidated by clematis. They don't know quite how to water it. They also, another whole group of plants that they don't know how to prune correctly. They're afraid to cut it at the wrong time. Well, if it's a ground cover, it would seem to me that it would be very minimal maintenance. And that's another important thing. You know, people don't have the time to care for gardens the way that they used to. They want to participate, like you were saying. Everybody is wanting to have their hand in the gardening of some sort, but they don't have the amount of time that they used, that, you know, a generation or two ago had. We just don't have it. We have many more distractions, and even with all of our devices, we seem to have less time.
Right.
So I'm excited to.
So here's a question for you. Is Monrovia getting into the veggie world at all?
Do you know what we've talked about vegetables, but but when we don't actually grow vegetables, and I guess how we come at that, you know, that sort of end of gardener's interest, you know, we do grow a lot of fruit trees and a lot of we do blackberries and raspberries, and we also do a lot of blueberries, and we do a lot of strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
We're tied in with some of the breeding programs from UC Davis in Northern California, which actually, Alice and Carmen, I'm so embarrassed about, because varieties like Albion and Seascape and Seaside, these are all ever-bearing strawberries from UC Davis. And I did not know until a couple of years ago that UC Davis probably has the finest strawberry breeding program of anywhere in the world. I mean, it's just, and I just bumped into that by mistake. So, we're big into raspberries. We work with a program called Brazilberries. There's a killer raspberry out there now called Raspberry Shortcake, which is the world's first dwarf thornless raspberry. And then on the blueberry side, blueberries like Bountiful Blue and Jelly Bean and Peach Sorbet, if you're in the warmer climates, blueberry, the Southern Moon, correction, the I'm getting ahead of myself. not Southern Moon.
So you're talking about a blueberry
blue.
That's good for the South?
it's just fabulous for, like, the West Coast. It goes down to a Zone 7, self-pollinating, and it actually has blue leaves during the growing season. And then in the warmer climates, the leaves turn to a wonderful kind of red burgundy color.
Yeah.
So I think the real fun part about plants like this is they're not just edibles, but they're also great plants for the ornamental landscape as well. They can fulfill both sides of the fence.
Okay, here's a kind of wrap up question. You sell mostly to independent garden centers. Is it the independent garden centers that influence your selection, or are you influencing their selection? Again, it's a chicken and an egg.
That is a $65,000 question. And, you know, we work very closely with independent garden centers, and then we also sell to the Lowe's company as well with their home centers. But our job as growers, and my job as I travel around America and as our salespeople and anyone from the company, is we've got to have our ear to the ground on what gardeners and what consumers are talking about. So I hope there's no one listening to what I'm about to say next, but I'm going to take the bull by the horns. Very often when I'm traveling around the States and I'm going to do a presentation somewhere, and you get lots of feedback at the presentation, but very often if there's a group of ladies sitting at an airport somewhere just chatting, I will actually try and get in on their conversation. And then very, very nicely switch the conversation to talk about plants.
Right.
So when you get a group of ladies that have, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes or a half an hour just to talk about plants and what they're doing in their garden and the colors they like, you know, and guys as well, of course, but it's fascinating, fascinating what you hear about what they're doing, what's working for them, what's not working, what are the colors they like. You know, it might be, for instance, that, you know, they love to garden with roses or lilacs or forsythias, and the reason that they garden with those plants is, you know, because they remember them from their mother's garden or their grandmother's garden. So the color thing is kind of hard to wrap around. You've got the colors of passion, the reds, and then you've got the pinks, which are always popular. Bright yellow or gold is always popular. But learning more about how people garden and how they use the plants is a great driver for us in what we try and produce to get the emotion going, to make people feel fulfilled and satisfied.
Right, right.
Great question.
Yeah, that's the pulse of what you're doing. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you. And I mean, I remember, I think we probably spent 2 hours together in Pittsburgh in a, you know, windowless room, but it was probably one of the most fascinating 2 hours we had. And thank you for giving us more of your time today, Nicholas, and for joining us and shedding some light on the trends and how it works. It's fascinating, fascinating stuff.
And we're going to post more about Monrovia and all those awesome videos that you made on your trip to the Chelsea show. We thought were great. So we're going to share those with our listeners and with our viewers, because it starts a lot of times on the other side of the pond, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And trickles back.
That's right.
And we didn't even touch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about your time in Albuquerque. That's a whole other subject.
That's going to be the next show. All right, we're going to corner you in Pasadena, and we're going to have you back.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Well, I can't wait. Thank you so much.
Thank you for all the work you do. It's lovely. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. Thank you, Carmen.
And so we have to shout out to our gift sponsor, GardenToolCompany.com. They are sponsoring giveaways all month. Get your hori hori or whatever sharp tool you want. All you have to do is follow us on Facebook or on Instagram. On Facebook, it's Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants. And on Instagram, it's Groundworks Gardens NYC. If you follow us, you have a chance to win. The show has been written by Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Krieg and engineered by Jack Inslee. Thank you for listening.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.